Afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Windows on the World. Mark Windows here from the UK, very sunny UK. The summer has returned. I don't know how long for, but it's a lot better today than it was on Tuesday, which is when we have our other show. Yes, Tuesdays and Thursdays, RBM, at, I think it's 2 p.m., isn't it? Yes, it's 8 p.m. over here, 8 p.m. in the UK. Well, on Tuesday, we talked about the World Economic Forum. Yes, these techno rats making big decisions on your behalf. Today, we're going to be talking to Vicky Davis of the technocratictyranny.com. First of all, a little lead-in. In the Club of Rome's first global revolution, which was released in the early 90s, I think, they stated, the Club of Rome, in case you didn't know, I'm sure most of you do, is an elite think tank. And they have published quite a few reports, and it was them who said that we should start paying and wiping ourselves off the planet and taxing ourselves to death because there was too many of us, and climate change was going to be the driving factor for getting everyone to pay up. But now we've got another one, you see. We've got COVID-19. But in the first global revolution of the Club of Rome, it said interdependence amongst nations within a single planetary system is constantly growing. And hasn't it grown, everybody? They said they were going to focus on issues, policies and options in a longer term perspective than is possible for governments which respond to the immediate concerns of an insufficiently informed constituency. Well, they were right about that, because there is nothing less informed than the puppets in Parliament in the UK or their constituents. In fact, there is not an MP, not one member of Parliament in the UK who knows anything about global governance. Not one. They will never bring it up. But the Club of Rome said a new system more capable of managing a planet than any other system. They talked of interdependence among nations. Yes, interdependence on, of course, Spaceship Earth, the global community, the global village. We're all part of the big Pangea. The problem is we can't go anywhere. They're locking us down with COVID. We're going to have vaccination ID to get on a plane. It's a dystopian nightmare. And now the latest crisis and driver of global governance, yes, COVID-19, the Great Reset. We did cover this on Tuesday's show. And if you go to windowsontheworld.net, you can find an article on there all about it. Latest in the articles section. Have a look through. Do have a look round the website. You'll find hundreds of shows, all very informative, many with articles attached. So it's a mixture of shows and articles. And you can find our recent shows, of course, the RBN archive, and our Sunday shows, and also the stuff we do on YouTube while we're still there every Friday at, that's 3:30 p.m. Central Time. That's that out of the way. But yes, we covered the World Economic Forum, how they were making decisions on behalf of you and the rest of the world at Davos. And COVID-19 is a business plan for the world, a driver of change for the new global health security system. And according to Klaus Schwab, who started the World Economic Forum in the early 70s, basically he said that 50% of the world's population will be affected by COVID-19. The drivers of the fourth industrial revolution at the World Economic Forum also state that the next crisis is already waiting for us. I mean, how many crises do we need? You know, we've got climate change. Well, the weather's always changing. Okay, that wasn't going very well, was it? Greta Thunberg was there. A material was getting a bit thin, wasn't it? But now we've got COVID, and we've now got in the UK a vaccine, but we're all being saved. And the World Economic Forum is saving the world for guess who? Yeah, the World Bank. And of course, all the lobbyists and our great friends, the Gates Foundation, our international allies, Bill and Melvin Gates. But thing is, we're going to go back now briefly to where this all started. And we've had this conversation before, myself and Vicky Davis. Well, it's like the Big Bang with this globalist stuff. What happened before that? You know, I mean, the Big Bang is a childish concept. Shouldn't have brought it up. Creationism, to me, is more plausible. However, different story. But in the, what was it called now? It was called Our Common Future. Our Common Future in 1987. gives you a bit of a clue as to where we are now and what happened with the sustainable development plans of this Agenda 2030, which is what it's all about. Oh, yes. The vaccination immunisation programme is a huge part of Agenda 2030. Is it a conspiracy theory? No. It's a 42-chapter document. Used to be on the UN website. It used to be called Agenda 21. 42 chapters of it, followed by the biodiversity assessment in 1995. Am I getting a bit boring here? Okay.
I lost you. I can't hear you. Okay, I don't know what happened to Mark, but picking up with the Great Reset, I watched a video this morning that's on the World Economic Forum website about COVID-19 being the driver of the Great Reset, and there are, I have a list here of things that Klaus Schwab said. He said, we're moving from shareholder capitalism to stakeholder capitalism. Of course, the difference there would be stakeholder capitalism would be the public-private partnership between the government, business, and the NGOs that are funded by government and business. Okay. The nature economy, which is, of course, the green economy, which just a shorthand for growth through reductionism. They're flipping the paradigm of economic value so that value is created by using less. Of course, you know, to do that, they've got to move to a completely assigned value monetary, or you could call it monetary system, because that's what we think of it as, but it will be like your uniform universal basic income. They will assign you a minimum income level, and then you can earn more money through reduction. So figure that one out.
Hear me now,
and I can barely hear you, Mark.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Going on over. Hear me? Yeah.
Can RBN hear you, or is it? Have I faded? Yeah, you're too low, Mark. I don't know. Something happened. Maybe hang up and call again or something.
Yes, you just carry on.
There we
yes.
Are.
All right. You can hear me again now.
Yeah.
Something went wrong at this end. Yes, they just don't want this information out there, do they? I'm a targeted individual, or maybe it's just a poor connection because I'm by the seaside. But yes, this is from Our Common Future. Thanks for that, Vicky. Yeah, it takes us into the whole idea of sustainable development, which is basically rationing of everything. And that's what COVID-19 is all about. How's COVID-19 about rationing? Well, it's all about making you aware that you're going to be taxed and controlled for everything you do. And that's really what COVID-19 was a cover for. But it said in 1987, in Our Common Future, this was before I got caught off, how are individuals in the real world to be persuaded or made to act in the common interest? How do you think we could make people act in the common interest? Hello?
Yes, through a virus.
Yes, that's one of the things. But these things need to be kind of focused and imposed on the public, don't they? And the public need to start fighting each other. So in other words, are you an anti-masker? Are you an anti-vaxxer? Well, you're not acting in the common interest, and you're going to be made to act in the common interest. But it says the answer lies partly in education. institutional development and law enforcement. And that's what we're hearing at the moment, isn't it? But it says, most important, effective participation in decision-making processes by local communities. That's called communitarianism. It's got nothing to do with you. It's just business, nothing personal. But we do have change agents to change your mind and steer you. We have a behavioural change unit in the UK, in our own government. And they said that people weren't panicking enough about the virus, you know, so we're going to have to frighten them a bit more. But it says, most important, effective participation in decision-making processes by local communities can help them articulate. Help them articulate. I mean, I like it when people help me articulate, don't you, Vicky? I love it. I really like being told that I can't articulate myself. And effectively enforce the common interest. So they talk about enforcing the common interest from 1987 in Our Common Future. The world must design strategies that will allow nations to move from present destructive processes of growth onto sustainable development paths, meaning, of course, poverty for all, not going anywhere, having no vehicles, which is what's happening in London. I mean, it's getting impossible to drive in London. It says this will require policy changes in all countries. And indeed, they seem to have got away with it, don't they, Vicky?
Well, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, people don't look at, if they look at the systems of government, and if they look at the world from a functional point of view, as opposed to, you know, the way that the world is normally looked at, which is just labels and nouns and descriptions. If you look at things functionally, it's easy to put it together. How could they take control and implement a police state in the United States without actually having the police do it? They're using the public health system, and they're using the paradigm of a disease. If you don't do this, you're going to die, so you got to do what we tell you. Stay in your house. Don't get close to anybody.
Vicky, you don't need to worry, because the UK Research and Innovation Fund have just come up with a vaccine, so you can go out again. Isn't that great?
Well, I wouldn't get too excited about that.
Why not? They'll
have to be able to track and trace you everywhere you go. You'll have to have an app that keeps track of where you are at all times, because even if they come up with a vaccine, you may get the disease anyway.
Let's not let the details get in the way of the big communitarian project, because we know that the virus is a secondary issue. It's just that we need vaccination ID for everybody on the planet, Vicky. I mean, what is the matter with you? How long have you been studying this? You must know by now what it's about, surely. But it does say here that early stage human trials of a COVID-19 vaccine have found it produces strong immune response. Well, of course it does. Your body's trying to get rid of it and shows no early safety concerns, according to results published today in The Lancet. The team of scientists at Oxford University's Jenner Institute and Oxford Vaccine Group, who are funded by the UKRI's Medical Research Council and the National Institute for Health Research as part of the COVID-19 rapid research response, say that they have taken the next step towards the discovery of a safe, effective and accessible vaccine against coronavirus. Well, they didn't really need one before, because what they're actually saying here is it's a virus for the common cold. So that's really a bit pointless, isn't it? But maybe it's for something else, you see. This is what I'm thinking. I mean, I'm a conspiracy theorist, Don. I've got my tinfoil hat on here. So it says the vaccine is similar to a vaccine the team previously developed for the closely related MERS coronavirus, which showed promise in animal and early stage human testing. Their earlier research and vaccine development were funded by the Medical Research Council and UK Vaccines Network, which has, of course, got some ties to Bill and Melvin Gates. Yes, it says Business Secretary Alok Sharma said, today's results are extremely encouraging, taking us one step closer to finding a successful vaccine to protect millions in the UK and across the world. Backed by £84 million worth of government investment for the vaccine's development and manufacture, the agility and speed with which the University of Oxford have been working is outstanding. I'm very proud of what they have achieved so far, he said. Well, he would be very proud, because the amount of investment that's gone in, and when we look at who's funding it as well, of course, we know it's basically the people who brought us the coronavirus, which is now masquerading as COVID-SARS-2, which has not actually been properly identified. But let's not let the details get in the way. This is surely a good thing, isn't it, though, Vicky? Because people will be able to sort of go out and, you know, go out and basically, you know, see their friends, you know, as Boris said, just, yeah, everyone needs to go out, you know, get in your social bubble and get vaccinated. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think?
But actually, the particular disease that they're trying to come up with a vaccine for doesn't really make any difference, because the idea is to get you an electronic health record. And when they do this contact tracing, they'll also, if they determine that you're positive, they have an app where you'll be able to self-report on the status of your health every day, and it will be kept in your e-health record. And oh, by the way, your phone will keep track of everywhere you go, and it will know everybody that you come into contact with.
Yes, but I've switched all mine off. I'm going to be sensible again now and go back to being Mark Windows. I was just playing the devil's advocate there, you see, Vicky. I don't know whether you picked that up, but
no, I think it's mainly. It doesn't matter. I mean, they tried with H1N1, and then they had SARS and MERS and Ebola. Ebola was a big flop. There were only 11,000 people worldwide that got Ebola.
Well, apparently that one's still active, but I've got no evidence of that. But, you know, my internet research has led me to believe that in West Africa they still have a bit of a problem with it. But I haven't been there to find out. And if I haven't been there to find out, I'm not going to report it as being a fact, you see. But, yeah, it looks like they're moving forward with this now. And they are going to be pushing it big time. It's very disturbing, actually, what's going on in Australia, because they've got these lockdowns. And it's much more draconian than it is here. But, of course, Australia is crown territory. So it means that we're going to get it too at some point. But in the UK, there is quite a lot of resistance to this vaccine. And what's interesting on social media, if you look at these government propaganda pieces and the pieces from the, well, intelligence services news, also known as the Daily Mail, the Daily Express and the Live Group, in the UK. The Live Group owns the Express and the Daily Mirror, and it has these localised online newspapers for every part of the country. And if you look at what people are putting underneath, it is changing quite a lot. And there are certain parts of the world where people are more compliant. For instance, Wales. They're very compliant there because what these communitarian kind of press outlets have done is they've basically said that all the foreigners coming in are carrying the coronavirus. All those people in camper vans who come in throwing litter everywhere, disrespecting the countryside, which of course they don't. They always take the stuff with them. But that's a side issue and it's not important, because what they're trying to do is get the public to basically create their own lockdowns, which they've done very successfully in North Wales. You see, they've got, in Scotland's pretty bad as well, but England's actually quite free at the moment. We've got these threats of these localized lockdowns, but they can't really lock down the UK. It can't really be locked down because I think we've only got something like 9,000 troops in the country, and they've obviously got other things to do. They've got war games to do on Salisbury Plain and stuff like that, so I don't think they'll want to get involved. And the testing centres, of course, were a huge flop, and now they're saying they're testing like 100,000 people, and there's all these people getting tested all over the place, but there's no real evidence for it, and it seems to have died a bit of a death here. So we've only got one thing to keep it going, and you know what that is, Vicky?
What?
Fear!
Oh, yeah, good motivator, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, we'll be back after the break. Hopefully you can hear me now.
Hey! Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendovite. Get the dependability of Extendovite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an energy cleaner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an energy cleaner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Windows on the World. We're talking technocracy. We're talking vaccines, immunity passports. Oh, all you anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers out there, unite, form groups, stay underground, or go out if you want to. It says here in this UK research information website that I was looking at earlier on, it says people who wear a face mask significantly lower the risk of spreading COVID-19 to others. Now, this is not peer-reviewed, and as you read the article, there's actually no evidence for it whatsoever. I mean, it's quite incredible. It says, someone standing 2 metres from a coughing person who has no mask is exposed to 10,000 times more droplets than someone half a metre from a coughing person who is wearing one, the researchers found. The findings, published on a non-peer-reviewed preprint server, could have implications for social distancing measures, the team says. Researchers at the University of Edinburgh compared the number of droplets that landed on a surface in front of a person coughing and speaking without and with a surgical mask or a basic cotton face covering. Now, tests were carried out on people on a life-sized anatomical human model connected to a machine that simulates coughs and speech. Now, the point is about all this, that they're so desperate now with this mask thing, because it's been going a few weeks, and I haven't been asked whether I'm immune to wearing one ever, whether I'm exempt, rather. and I've never worn one. But I have heard a few incidences of kind of Stasi-type individuals, mainly at things like petrol stations and shops, actually giving people a hard time over masks. But I've never had that opportunity yet to say that, why are you targeting my disability? You know, and I really, I've been dying to do it, you know, and no one's asked me yet. But, I mean, it is incredible, this stuff, because we were just saying before the show, I think, Vicky, that the actual narrative of it is so sloppy, isn't it? I mean, the thing's pretty much died off in the UK. I mean, yeah. There was like one case a day last couple of days, you know, the actual real cases, which are probably not real cases, because as we know, if you've been tested for COVID-19 and you die of it and you did have a positive result, which merely means that you've had a cold at some point, that you will die of COVID-19, even if you get run over by a tractor. So it's not really a pandemic anymore. So what they're doing now is trying to ramp up this fear factor. And it's kind of an interesting time, I think, because you've got a lot of kind of press manipulation going on. The press, as I said before the break, they're trying to get people to turn their neighbours in and all that. And that's really all they've got now. So I think this is quite interesting. And, of course, we've got this new vaccine that's now there. But there's a huge resistance to it in the UK. What's things like on your side, Vicky? What would you say?
It's pretty much the same. I've only been challenged once, and that was at Walmart. And it's only because the store was closing, and the store manager or assistant manager was out in the front, you know, to keep to tell people that they have to go in and out really quickly because they're closing. But he told me that masks are required, and I just told him, I can't wear a mask. I just can't do it. And so he let me go.
So, yes. We were talking about the liability aspect as well. So especially with the vaccines, they're now trying to make these public interface officials, you know, they're actually looking at the liability of all that, because that was my argument with it to start with, especially with the mask thing. I mean, there's no one who's going to say wear a mask if you're going to go into the supermarket, because if you keel over, then it's their fault, isn't it? You know,
so, that's right. Yeah.
So that's the point.
Idaho's governor just called a special session of the legislature for the purpose of passing legislation to give liability protection to anybody who enforces this, the mandates of the public health Marxists.
So, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And there are quite a lot of them. There are quite a lot of them. The whole idea of the communitarian system is that it recruits everybody. And we do have a lot of recruits in the UK. But quite interesting, all this. We're going to now talk a little bit about the sort of bigger picture of this and your website, technocratictyranny.com, which I find very useful. And you have found papers that I didn't even know existed. And your latest article is very interesting to me because, as we said, I think, on our last show, that when you find out one of these papers, there's always one before it, isn't there?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've gone back in history as far back as to before World War II was over, you know, right? Or before we even entered it. So they've been working on this global system for a very long time, probably since the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah.
From the 19th century.
And, I did cover that, actually, a while ago. Yeah, all about what came out of Britain, the place called Britain, which is not really the United Kingdom. It was the name of a particular group of people. It was social engineers, the British. We'll see you after the break. Winners on the World here.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Public Broadcasting Network late-night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the red pill.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong part, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right.
Hi, welcome back to Windows on the World. I'm with Vicky Davis. We're talking technocracy today. We often do talk technocracy and Windows on the World because it's a very important subject. And it started off at the beginning of the century. In fact, if we look at the social engineering, it really started off in the 1800s. But we're going to be talking now about the G7. In February of 1995, ministers and business leaders met and identified a list of pilot projects for international cooperation. The two Americans of interest who attended this conference were Vice President Al Gore and Robert T. Allen, CEO of AT&T. Now, Vicky's just produced an article on this, and it's called Global Information Society, Anarchy in Government. I'm going to let you take over from there, Vicky. It's a very interesting and detailed article.
Okay. Yeah, I wrote this article as just kind of an introduction to the global systems that were planned by the G7. The G7 began, they're the leaders of the Western countries. And they started off in 1975, and they meet annually, but their ministers is where the real dirty work is done. They're the ones that do all the negotiations, and the leaders' meetings are really more or less perfunctory. They just put their stamp of approval on it. But this group, the G7, planned on beginning in 1995 with this meeting in Brussels. They defined 11 pilot projects for global systems. And what's interesting about it to me is that the research that I've done on the United States, the transportation system, the healthcare system, and all of that, it meshes up perfectly in line with the plans of the global systems. Okay, so that's how I have both sides of it. I have the global picture of what they intended to do, and I have what they did do in the United States. Okay, and they set it up so that there were coalitions of countries that worked cooperatively on the various systems. Now, the systems that I focused on in particular are the Environment and Natural Resources Management, which was assigned to the United States, the Global Emergency Management Information Network Initiative that was assigned to Canada, the Global Healthcare Applications, which was assigned to the European Commission, France, Germany, and Italy, and the Maritime Information Systems, with the coordinators being the European Commission and Canada, and of special note is the MERA sub-project is the Intermodal Logistics and Port Telematics, which is really a mouthful, but that is the global network for the global transportation system, port to port, which I've done a lot of research on that. But this article, if you're not familiar with the G7, this article gives you kind of an introduction to it, gives you the links so that you can go read about it, and then you'll be on your way to understanding what's going on in the world today, because no matter what they say on the television about what anything is about, behind the scenes, it is about the systems of control, the panopticon, control of all of the resources and all of the people, all of the economy, control of everything.
Yeah, the global to local idea. I mean, I've grasped some of that, but you seem to have got your teeth into a much larger piece of the pie there. It's very interesting, all that. I mean, when you look through this stuff, it is a bit of a bottomless pit, though, and I'm always trying to simplify it, simplify and simplify, get things down to sound bites, because otherwise you're part of the problem, because everything that the globalists come out with is a meme. It's like Klaus Schwab saying basically that anything that's not digital is going to be extinct.
And that's huge. That, absolutely. That right there tells you that it's all about the computer systems, the networks, the connections. They are building a global panopticon, and we will all be enslaved. I mean, you know, it doesn't get much more simple than that, but it's kind of hard to, you know, wrap your mind around it if you're not a systems analyst.
Well, I'm not, and it is. But yeah, G8 Global Information Society Pilot Projects. The G7 members, this is in 95. This is what your article refers to. The G7 members, along with the European Commission, decided to take the opportunity offered by the ministerial conference held in Brussels on the 25th and 26th of February 1995 to identify a number of selected projects where international cooperation could be an asset. Well, I wonder if I know what that's about. Could you expand on that a bit, Vicky?
What they did basically is to look at the systems that each of the countries would have in common. We all have a healthcare system, right? We all have universities and research laboratories. We all have emergency management. That one is a special one because they needed to do something with the military. If they're getting rid of nation states, which they are, they had to do something with the military. So the idea was to turn them all into global first responders to all hazards, all emergencies. So that's the global emergency management system. We all have commerce corporations that are shipping goods from this country to that country. And so they needed a global logistics system. So that's one of the systems. So essentially, they looked at what systems could they have that were all in common in all of the countries, and how could they build systems that would be global, where they could have this cooperative effort going on.
And how long do you think that's taken, Vicky? How long has that actually taken for them to get to where they are now, which I would guess is pretty much to completion stage?
Well, they started this in 1994, but I know for sure that Germany started working on the telematics system, the smart highway systems, in 1985.
And really? Just to clarify that, you mean smart motorways?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which really, I suppose, would be a follow-on from toll roads, wouldn't they?
Well, it's all part of it.
Yeah.
It's all part and parcel of the same system. It's automation of anything to do with anything that goes on the roadways. So, you know, trucks, passenger cars, all of it, communicating with the roadway. And, you know, what was interesting when I started researching this was that when I was about 16 years old, there was a program on TV that I used to watch with my dad, and it was called something about the 21st century. And one of the systems, and that particular system stuck in my mind, was automation of the roadways and how your car would be able to communicate with the road, and it would basically take over control of your car so that it would eliminate the problems of traffic jams and crashes and all kinds of things. And I thought, isn't that so bizarre? At 16 years old, I was seeing this on TV as a system that they had planned in the future. And then here I am, like 50 years later, researching it and discovering that they're actually doing it.
Yes, but it's not without faults, is it? I mean, the whole point about this driverless cars and driverless lorries is they haven't been very successful so far. In fact, Elon Musk's best friend, I think it was, died in a head-on collision when he'd had his car put onto autopilot. So there is a big problem with this technology. And that's what I find interesting about it.
Yeah, it's a very complex thing. Driving is a very complex thing because at any moment, a child can dart out in front of your car. It's just very complex. I don't ever want a car that drives itself.
I certainly wouldn't get into one. And there are some really horrific things. They seem to have this tendency to veer into the Verge. And there's quite a lot of insight. You can look at that on YouTube, actually, or your favourite place for looking at uploaded videos, which obviously isn't YouTube anymore, but they still have the majority of them. But, yeah, you can see these things being tested out, and they're pretty horrific. I'd never get into one. But I think it's quite funny as well about the electric cars, because they're trying to get all these electric cars. And in London, it's kind of interesting as well, because a lot of boroughs now are looking like sort of little fairground tracks with pretend cars on them. And they're these electric cars. And you're starting to see the change on the roads. And we were talking about this the other day, that you've still got these lobbying groups going on about pollution. And there really isn't any pollution in London anymore. And it's kind of fascinating the way it's changed in a very short period of time. That's what I find about it, is that this stuff was in sort of hibernation as far as the public were aware for a very long time. In the last 5 years, specifically in the UK I'm talking here, we have seen everything re-engineered. We're seeing the smart cities going up. We're seeing the high-speed rail link that's going to be in place, that's going to connect these vibrant communities. And we're seeing all these government ministers who are pushing this through. And of course, because I knew what was coming, it was of no surprise to me. But when you look at how places have been re-engineered, especially in London, which stayed the same for 40, 50 years, last 5 years, massive change. Everywhere starting to look homogenised, all the same. Obviously, it's all corporate chains, and the roads are radically different. And the other thing about this kind of sustainable development idea and automation is that it gives the cities a very dead feel. There's no buzz anymore. There's no excitement, but everyone can walk around in a daze. And yeah, that seems to be.
I've always said that the world we're heading, the world of one, is gray. There is no color. There is no life. There is no, there is no anything human. It's all engineered, and it's they will be directing people in the same way that that GM used to have their car factories put out cars. It's all assembly line. It's all cookie cutter. There is nothing unique and nothing human about it. That's all I can say.
Yeah, right. Well, the actual implementation of it is quite disturbing. Yeah, I mean, I walked around London last few weeks, and it changes every time I go there, and we're looking at the major routes that go through central London are now like these kind of toy towns. You know, in Camden Town, for instance, because they've made everything look basically pedestrianised, you actually don't know whether you're on the road or you're on the pavement, you know. And that's another thing that's really strange about it. And then they've put all these rainbow crossings in there. So it really doesn't look like a road anymore. It looks like you're on some kind of gaming facility, or you're in some kind of virtual reality. It doesn't look real at all. And they actually refer to this, don't they? World Economic Forum. They actually talk about things like virtual reality, and that we're basically going into different dimensions and all this kind of stuff. It's totally bizarre, because these technocrats, I think when you listen to people like Klaus Schwab, you just think he's the founder of the World Economic Forum. You can hear him on their latest video. And when you hear him talking, you just hear this kind of gravelly kind of nonsense coming out. But when you actually write it down, it's pretty scary. And it's very clear that he's thought carefully about what he's saying. But when he's saying it, it doesn't seem like that at all. It just seems like he's droning on about a load of rubbish. But you have to write this stuff down. And it's the same with the Global Governance Summit. I actually wrote down a lot of what they were saying, because basically it's completely tyrannical what they're saying. And yeah. I think it's because they see these old farts sat there droning on. They think, oh, God, what's he on about? But when you actually write it down and decode it or watch, you know, the captions, you start to realise that they're very careful about what they're actually saying. And what they're saying is pretty scary stuff.
Yeah. Well, and of all the people, you know, designing the world, you do not want systems engineers doing it, because, as you say, they're making everything the same, because that's the way computer systems designers do it. You don't want to reinvent the wheel, you know? So once a design is done, you just take that and clone it and clone it and clone it. And one time I was listening to a program on economic development, and they were talking to some woman down in Colombia, I think, South America, but she sounded like she could have been, and she's Hispanic, she speaks with a Hispanic accent, but she could have been from Kansas, the way she was talking about their urban economic development. And it was just a mind blower. It was so cognitive dissonance. It caused cognitive dissonance. Because where is the cultural color of Colombia? We don't want Colombia to be like Kansas, like a city in Kansas. That destroys their culture.
And well, exactly. But the whole idea of the global Pangea is a borderless world that we can't actually visit. We can't go anywhere. That's the whole point. This is what my objection to it is. These technocrats want to lock us down. And I find that really, really irritating, and vaccinate us with this muck that we don't need. However, we'll be back after the break. Hold that thought.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Today we're talking about technocracy. This is Windows on the World with Vicky Davis. I actually got cut off in my prime earlier on, and I think Vicky filled you in with a bit of technocratic information. But I want to let you finish off here, Vicky, because we were talking about your articles, your website, which is very informative, thetechnocratictyranny.com. And just before the break, you were finishing off saying something. So please refer to this article and anything else that you'd like to finish off with.
Okay, yeah, the name of the article is Global Information Society, Anarchy in Government, because what our government actually did is they went into rebellion against the people when they partnered up with other governments to build this global system. And the people that are involved in designing and building these global systems, they are a separate class. They're no longer part of the humanity that we are part of. They are designing systems in which we will all live and work. And in designing these systems, they changed the role of government. They separated the economy from control of the government, and they've made our governments basically the human resources department. And there was one governor up in Montana, I believe, that said, our job is to educate, medicate, and incarcerate. And so if you think of government becoming the human resources managers, that's what they do. That's what their function is now.
That's really interesting, actually. I really like the way you've put that. In fact, I was making a note of that because that's exactly what it is. And you've actually come up with a term which I can now use because I'm getting a bit sick of calling them all useful idiots all the time. But that's really good, the human resources department. That's exactly what they are because they can just be hired and fired. Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they're working for the global corporations. The whole global system is being built for commerce, for global commerce. And, you know, at some other time we can talk about how they've designed breaking off the small and medium businesses, how they've split up their businesses to make it appear like there's an economy, a real economy. But all the spin-offs are just part of a bigger corporation. They're not real businesses.
No, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. This is actually a quote from the Young Leaders Program of the World Economic Forum, and it states that, according to them, COVID-19 has highlighted the fact that our previous systems were neither equitable nor sustainable. The crisis also presented an opportunity to reset and work towards a greener future. So this means fake green for the monitoring and control of us all. So get yourselves over to Davos and give them a hard time. That's what we're talking about. Those people in Switzerland, the World Economic Forum, and of course all of the technocrats out there. Thanks to Vicky Davis. I'll be back next Tuesday. Join us on Friday and Sunday at winnersontheworld.net.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.